Hello and welcome to the Modern Urologist. I'm Dr. Todd Cohen, Urology Medical Director at Myriad Genetics, and I'm honored today to be joined by Dr. Howard Soul, the Chief Scientific Officer of the Prostate Cancer Foundation. Dr. Soul has been with the Prostate Cancer Foundation since its beginning, and he's going to tell us about the origins of it, as well as his role and what he foresees as the future with the Prostate Cancer Foundation with respects to urology.
I want to dive right into about the Prostate Cancer Foundation. Tell me the history of it. How did it get started, and you know, where has it gone?
Well, thank you, Dr. Cohen. It's a real pleasure to be on this podcast with you. Thank you for the opportunity. The Prostate Cancer Foundation, formerly known as CAPCURE, was founded in 1993 by financier and philanthropist Michael Milken when he was diagnosed with very advanced prostate cancer. Mike talks about this freely. I'm not giving away up any patient rights to privacy, but Mike had a very serious case at the age of 45. And this was really the first major health problem in his life. Although his family had been riddled with cases of cancer, his in-laws, his own family, lots of cancer. And Mike had been funding cancer research since the 80s. So he knew the lay of the land. But as he tells the story, he gave himself about 12 hours to feel bad about his prognosis of advanced primary prostate cancer, got on a plane and went around the world about six times to figure out how to solve the problem. And in 1993, in February, March, and April, what he learned was that it was really a wasteland of therapies at the time. There was surgery, there was radiation, there was castration, and there really weren't, you know, solid evidence-based treatments for advanced disease. So he went ahead and had outstanding, you know, conventional medical care for his disease. Knock on wood, 25, almost 26 years later, he is still no evidence of disease. So very, very amazing. So Mike formed the foundation to rapidly fund science for patients that translated into better treatments for advanced prostate cancer. So in the early days, we really weren't in the urology space. We were in radiation oncology and medical oncology. And I'm just so proud of the accomplishments that now over $800 million has supported, you know, starting with a drop in death rate due to Mike and the foundation, now known as Prostate Cancer Foundation, or PCF. PCF raising awareness in patients, in the patient communities around the world. Death rates have plummeted from prostate cancer. Better urology, better radiation oncology, has fed into a lot of that. But the new treatments that prolong survival, and there are many of them now, new treatments that are good for supportive care for patients under treatment for advanced prostate cancer, all of those treatments have our fingerprints on it. And if you're interested, I'll give you some specific examples.
Yeah, give me some. I'd love to hear about it. If you could put them in kind of a chronologic order, like, and see where it's gone, because I know it's grown.
My pleasure. So if you go back to the early 2000s, Charles Sawyers at the time, an hem-onc fellow at UCLA, working with a chemist, Michael Jung, and others at UCLA, had what at the time was a heretical hypothesis, which was androgen receptor, as you know, the engine of prostate cancer, was overexpressed and mutated in hormonally resistant disease. This was just not a well understood area, and Charles created elegant models, cell lines, as well as animal models of mutated and overexpressed androgen receptor. And working with chemist Michael Jung, they created a chemical that is now called enzalutamide that actually stopped these cancers from growing after they were resistant to all castration methodology. That drug is now standard of care for patients throughout the natural history of prostate cancer. And it was our initial funding that jump-started that program. That program also gave us apalutamide, another drug in this area, and it's now completely standard of care. The other early funding, when Cougar was started, we learned about it. That drug, which is now called abiraterone, was going to be a compound for treatment of advanced prostate cancer that was probably going to be less toxic than Nizoral, and urologists would like to prescribe it to their patients. Well, it turns out that funding we supplied to the University of Washington, to Elihei Mostajal and Pete Nelson, two amazing physician scientists, and many others, found that the mechanism of action actually was the blockade of the synthesis of intracrine androgens. In other words, this drug blocked the ability of cancer cells to make androgen.
As the adrenal glands.
Exactly, which had a significant effect in the value of the drug to the company that was researching it in the clinic, but gave urologists and medical oncologists yet another tool in the toolbox to prolong the survival of men with advanced prostate cancer. So those two areas were of substantial multi-tens of millions of dollars of investment, both in the on the preclinical side, as well as even some of the early clinical trials by the foundation.
But the Prostate Cancer Foundation is not all about just drug development and research in that. There's a lot of advocacy work that you guys do as well. Tell me more about specifically, you know, programs that you guys have funded or have started. I know there's a lot of them.
So our patient-centered, first of all, we advocate for more research funding. So every year we partner with all the other organizations that advocate for NIH funding for prostate cancer research, and especially the Department of Defense Prostate Cancer Research Program, which is now up to $110 million a year in research funding for everything prostate cancer that you could possibly believe. It's a great program, and I've been fortunate by disclosure to be on the so-called integration panel. That is a team of people that come together a few times each year, doing it virtually now, no airplanes or hotels, which is probably healthier, but nonetheless very effective in building a portfolio of prostate cancer research through the Department of Defense. The other internal project that we are extremely proud of is an amazing patient guide, which every urologist and their patients should and medical oncologists, anybody taking care of prostate cancer patients, the patient themselves and their family can download from pcf.org our patient guide, which is really the most comprehensive source of patient distilled information. I just came from my internist and my PSA is 5, what should I do? All the way through, you know, surgery, radiotherapy, and unfortunately, into advanced disease for those patients that don't respond to local treatment as well as one would hope. So this guide is free to the world, and I would suggest that all listeners to this podcast download a copy, make it available to their patients or to family members that could be interested in this information.
And full disclosure, I think you and I talked before about this. This was the information my patients would ask me, where should I go and get this? I said, and I always tell them the most factual information you can get without bias is really going, you know, go to the Prostate Cancer Foundation website, and that's where you'll get probably your best information. I think,
yes,
you know, some of the other sites are good. There are good ones out there, but you have to be careful about this, you know, Dr. Google. For sure. And I think that's, you know, inclination is just jump on right away and look for that. So that was always my first start there. You can always branch out.
Yeah, I completely agree. We also update the patient community as a part of our advocacy activity with all new developments. So if a patient wants to learn about PSMA PET, a new diagnostic tool that helps stage and detect local and or distant disease, you can learn all about it there. And any new treatment that we believe is hot and holds great potential for patients You can read about it all at pcf.org.
All right. So this is what you've done in the past and some of what you're doing. You're working really closely right now with the VAs and developing and testing veterans to help them with their prostate cancer from on the genetic and the genomic level. So can you tell me a little bit about that and what that is geared and the goal of that overall?
So this was the vision of our CEO, Dr. Jonathan Simons and Mike Milken. I am an early adopter to what they have fundraised for quite substantially. So what our VA program is, in its simplest terms, are 13 or so centers of excellence, which are VA hospitals that are associated with academic medical centers with very strong GU oncology program. So examples are UCLA and the West LA VA, University of Washington and the Puget Sound VA, Northwestern University and the VA in Chicago, et cetera. And the goal of this program was to provide some infrastructure funding, which we kind of call the glue that holds all of these people together, with great leadership, both from Rebecca Levine at PCF and many people in the VA program. They take this very seriously, the goal being that every veteran should receive care as good or better than those patients presenting at academic research centers of high excellence throughout the country. So that means that a patient being seen at Sloan Kettering with prostate cancer, as well as a patient being seen at the Bronx VA or the Manhattan VA, all of them would receive the same care. And we believe that the catalyst for really, really good care is genomic medicine. Therefore, this program really resolves around sequencing every veteran with prostate cancer. And we're making great progress in that regard. Hundreds and soon to be thousands of patients at VAs across the country that wouldn't have received this kind of analytical workup are now receiving this privilege. So you can imagine how this ties into developing a prognosis, an accurate prognosis for patients. For patients with advanced disease, you can imagine how this might help direct their treatment with very precise medications. And clinical trials to test lots of hypotheses of precision medicine are really now being made available to veterans throughout the United States through this program. And we're very proud of that.
You'll develop a huge database of information to help not just with the patients that enter clinical trials, but to help to show other clinical trials that are going on about, you know, who may benefit from the treatments that are being developed.
Absolutely. So one of the big confusing elements for physicians today, for patients that have recurrent disease, is which of these outstanding antiandrogens to use first and how to sequence these medications in their patients. And that book has not been written yet, but I can give you a hint that the database at the VA in short order will be reporting on some phenomenal results where, you know, every patient treated with these medications goes into the database, as you said, Todd, and they can be studied retrospectively to understand who responded, how deeply did they respond, in what sequence of medication was their response either enhanced or attenuated. And the learning through the bioinformatics portal at the VA is just limitless at this point in time and is being exploited by some terrifically intelligent people.
Well, looking forward to that, because I know when I was running our advanced prostate cancer center at my practice, that was always an issue. We just didn't know what would be the, you know, the best way to start. And sometimes it was just really dictated about, you know, how could we get whoever their insurance would pay for first is what we could start with. And that was always troubling because you didn't know. That was early on too. I mean, we didn't have that information. And it's nice to hear that, yeah, because sequencing or timing of treatments has to make a difference. I mean, it just makes sense that it would make a difference. So that's great to hear. And I really look forward to that. And hopefully we get you back on to talk about specifically about that in the future. One of the other things that PCF does is you're very supportive of not just the VA and developing research, but of individuals. There are a lot of very good researchers and academic urologists that are supported and have been during their fellowships and their training by PCF. And as you described to me before, it's to make sure that we can keep good people in academic medicine. Well, tell me about your program and how you support.
I've learned many things working with Mike Milken for over 20 years now. One of the most important things I've learned from Mike is the significance of interpersonal relationships. And I'd like to think we are, as a foundation, really good at this. So one of the programs where we leverage our relationships is our fellowship or young investigator program. It has selected in the last 10, 11 years, over 300 individuals that represent everything prostate cancer. We have funded medical oncology, urology, radiation oncology fellows, junior faculty, pathologists, nurse practitioners, you name it, you know, bioinformaticians, basic scientists, anybody that touches prostate cancer gets screened through a rigorous peer review program that follows their science, follows their academic pedigree. And as you say, in a hopes of keeping them in academic medicine. And it doesn't stop with the money. It actually just starts with the money. We have postdocs and fellows and junior faculty member who are now mentors of their own students and programs and clinical people, basic science people, that glues this field together. We give them community. Dr. Miyahira, Andrea Miyahira on my staff. We have multiple opportunities for them to have learning experiences each week, every 52 weeks a year, practically, where they can pick and choose what they want to learn about, what they want to contribute to scientifically or clinically. We also provide them with career advice, with mentoring opportunities. In fact, there's a really, if anything good could come from COVID, it's the idea of working virtually. And we're actually setting up a virtual mentorship program. So we have a group of senior investigators who said they would be willing to give a few hours a month to a young investigator somewhere distant to them. So for example, somebody in New York who is an expert in some topic area could be mentoring a young person in Los Angeles or San Francisco or Houston. It's just a great program. It's going to grow. And it's one of the things that we're most proud of.
So most of your funding is, I'm guessing, from industry and also private funds and people contributing. What areas are you guys probably, it looks, sounds like your big push these days is into genetics and precision medicine. What can you say to investors that the future holds for prostate cancer and, you know, with your help and their help, because you can't do it without them. So where do you say that they should, why should they give to the Prostate Cancer Foundation? You know, and I know some of the answers to this without even, you know, before I ask it, it's not all about just prostate cancer. A lot of this stuff has crossed over.
Of course.
Investigations have crossed over into other cancers. Although the goal was prostate, it's really crossed into other cancers. So
yeah, look, one of our board members who you know, Andy von Eschenbach, calls us the Precision Cancer Foundation because so much of what we do, just PARP inhibitors alone, affects so many other human cancers that although we focus on prostate cancer, as you say, Todd, the research we fund often touches many others. Even PSMA, which we think is a prostate selective target, persists in other diseases. FAPI, another target that's being exploited right now for theranostics, fibroblast activation peptide, you know, discovered on pancreas cancer, also on prostate cancer, and imaging studies in Heidelberg have shown a distribution over many cancers. We're very deep into funding research, clinical research, and some basic science around FAPI. So you're absolutely right. The other point I'd like to make is that we can look backwards. We can look at our history and pat ourselves on the back for a number of life-prolonging treatments that either would not exist or would have come much later if not for PCF. But we have to look to the future as well, because we still haven't finished our work. As long as patients are dying from advanced metastatic prostate cancer, there's an unmet medical need. And defining that unmet medical need, and as Jonathan Simons likes to say, new drugs, new drugs, new drugs. We need new drugs. We know where some of the Achilles heels are in advanced prostate cancer that aren't being addressed by PSMA targeted therapies, aren't being addressed by androgen receptor targeted therapies. We see a future where immunotherapy will work for prostate cancer, where many other targets will be addressable in the clinic. We need to fund that science, and that's our goal going forward.
So did you ever think 25 years ago or more, when you got involved with this CAP cure back then, the future of medicine was going to be found in genetics? I mean, it was, yes, the androgen receptor started all, but look what's come in the last 25, 30 years.
Absolutely true. I have to sort of pinch myself sometimes when cloning a gene was, you know, one gene at a time, which was the way it was done in the laboratory for decades, when the first human genomes were deposited in Science and Nature and distributed around the world to where we are today. Sequencing itself is pretty generic, fairly commoditized. It's the applications, the way it's packaged, and how patients can benefit from it, especially when it comes to familial genetics, predispositions to disease. The biggest surprise to me is the penetrance of BRCA2 in advanced prostate cancer. I never would have thought, but modern sequencing technology has delivered that to the patient communities, and it's making a big difference. So understanding your family genetics and genomics, what does your germline tell your doctor? And the doctors of today and into the future will understand the profound implications of these findings. I think it will become even more widespread than it is today. And we're really proud to have played a part in that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the genetics world, you know, BRCA2 and some of these other genes, you know, the breast cancer surgeons and the medical oncologists that have been dealing with this for years have much more comfort level. And the urologists are now, just in the last couple of years, I would say, are much more conversant in it. It wasn't, you know, 5 years ago at an AUA meeting, no one was talking BRCA2 or ATM or CHEK2 or any of these. It wasn't part of our lexicon. And now that's all you hear.
Yeah, you hear, but not enough, in my humble opinion. You know, you and I talk to the creme de la creme of urology. This has to percolate out into the general community. And even more than urology, it has to percolate into primary care medicine, where these patients are seen first before their PSA is 5. And you know, these are the families and relatives of patients with cancer that could learn a lot about their risk by knowing their own family genomics. And I think it's the future. I really do.
You and I both know that to get a man to even remember his family history is part of the problem. I always used to tell patients, if I diagnosed them with cancer, bring your wife or your daughter, because you won't be able to answer any of the questions. So I think that just the understanding of this by the layperson, this is important for men, not just women that have breast cancer.
I mean, women ask all the hard questions at the support group meetings while their husbands kind of look at the floor. So the female community of prostate cancer caregivers, they do a really good job.
Much better than the guy. But I think the guys are starting to learn that they have to play an important role in their own care.
Absolutely.
They can't just leave it up to their wives. I want to thank you so much for coming on, and not just for talking to us, but doing what you've done for so many years to advance treatment of prostate cancer and the understanding of prostate cancer. And I think you're right. Knowing the history of the PCF and what you guys have done, you guys played an invaluable part in advancing what we know and how we're treating and saving lives. I'd like to say what I do and what I've done as a clinician and what I'm doing now is helping that, but I can definitely say that you guys have absolutely been on the forefront of saving lives.
Thank you for that. You know, it's a strong team. It's awesome leadership from Michael Milken throughout our organization of highly dedicated people, many of which could be doing lots of different things, but they've dedicated a career to making the outcome for patients better. I believe we're succeeding. Our work's not finished yet. We have a lot to do, but we're very proud of our accomplishments.
Yeah, well, again, and thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and spreading the word. And I'm sure this won't be the last time we'll be speaking. So
great.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye, Todd.